One of the things about retail, it's people were buying retail and they were paying like really low cap rates. And in some areas, the cap rate has gone up because it has been somewhat stable. But the last couple of years, when COVID hit, prices dropped. And then you have Amazon as well. So that kind of took a lot of the retailers out. So one of the things you got to worry about is just making sure your tenants are like e-commerce proof. If you have a nail salon or,
Yeah.
haircut places, things like that, restaurants. Try to get some tenants in there that are semi-recession proof and e-commerce proof.
This is the naked truth about real estate investing. Your host, Javier, has already been through all the brain damage of this business, so you don't have to go through it. That way, you're not exposed to all of the risk of losing your shirt or getting caught with your pants down. So let's dive into another No BS episode right now.
Welcome to the Naked Truth about Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Tim Mai, and I have my super handsome co-host, Javier Hinojo, and bulk as well. Not handsome and bulk. There you go. Flex for us, Javier.
Yeah.
Welcome, everyone.
Welcome to the show. This is sponsored by the Hero Capital Raising Show. Thank you, Tim. Yeah, I think the last show we were talking about taking our shirts off at the beach. That's why multifamily was so sexy. People want to see your big muscles. And nobody talks about industrial because that's like your chicken legs. It's like going to the beach, taking off your pants and, oh, look at the chicken legs. Nobody shows off their chicken legs, right? But this is part two of a different kind of commercial assets and previous episode, we talked about multifamily, industrial, and self-storage. And on this one, we're going to chat about hotels, land, retail, and office. My second favorite asset besides self-storage is retail. And we'll leave that till the end so we can chat a little bit about that. But we can start with hotels. I don't have a hotel. I have one of my really good partners. He lives in Houston. He started buying hotels. He loves it. He makes a ton of money buying hotels, and he's building hotels. They've taken a big hit. They've been on sale. Some people convert them into multifamily. Some people buy them, fix them up, and then put a brand name in them and make cash flow. But it's a hospitality, so it's very intense management, right? Like, you got employees,
right.
Very service industry, very service oriented kind of business.
And yeah, and just any of these asset classes, when you specialize in it, the ins and outs of it, and you know how to make it successful. I think if I remember correctly, Javier, you were in Dubai and you met like a couple or something that have a huge hotel portfolio.
Yeah,
correct?
For sure. And they most of it is in Texas. It's super nice Indian couple.
Okay.
And sitting there chatting with them and like, oh yeah, man, they give me their name and they invite us for dinner the next day. And I was telling my wife, like, why was I even in that meeting? Because I was embarrassed of saying, what I did. Because, yeah, my wife and I, just by themselves, they own $10 billion worth of hotel.
Oh,
like,
my god,
$10
gosh.
Billion. Like, just by themselves. Like, nobody else. No partner.
Wow.
Just their family owns $10 billion of hotels. I'm sitting there, yeah, I'm like,
wow.
$170 million in assets. I didn't even want to say nothing. And I got a partners and stuff. I hope they didn't ask me anything. But they were great people. They actually live in Dallas. And they live in Dubai, England, and Dallas. And I've been meaning to go down there to see him in Dallas. We just can't connect. But anyways, yeah, they make a lot of money. And they're like, the hotel's been great for them. And they kept buying more. And even though they've been on sales, it's just the business that they love. And they're good at it.
Yeah. And there's also a lot that are buying up like older hotels and even motels and converting them to multifamily, especially studios. Apartments. And yeah, so that's happening a lot. I actually, a friend of mine just presented me a deal yesterday, north of Houston here. There's things about it I didn't like about it. I like the idea. It's just the market and where the location where it's at was not ideal for me, not the location I would want to own an asset in. But the team has done a number of these deals, a lot of them here in the Texas area. So they know what they're doing. But yeah, so it is, I think we're going to see more and more of that happening as some of these older motels and older hotels, like, I guess, in trouble and need a better use for them.
Yeah, for sure. So that's your hotel model. And what do you want to jump over to, Tim? Office?
Yeah.
We can talk about office.
Yeah, let's talk about office because that's another area. Yeah, that's another area that got in trouble since COVID, right? We all saw what happened to WeWork. I think they're talking about filing bankruptcy or something. I don't know. I might be.
Yeah.
I thought I saw something like that. But anyways, yes, offices, a lot of them are in trouble. And the cool thing, one of our guests that Harvey and I interviewed, it was Kenny Worth. and him and his team are doing office conversion. So he's taking A-class properties in downtown of a major metro and converting them into multifamily. We talk about hotel to multifamily conversion. That's a lot easier because all the plumbing are there, especially if you're just converting them into studio. Not a big deal. But when you're converting from office to multifamily, it's a much bigger conversion than a hotel to multifamily. And one of the things I learned from Kenny Javier that kind of stuck with me, and it makes so much sense. He said that if you look at like nationwide, offices generally have a 70% occupancy rate. Like that's the normal operating in that industry. Since COVID, the occupancy has gone down to 50%. Okay. So now a lot of people are not coming back to the office to work. They work from home. How do we solve that? How do we solve when you have low occupancy rate? And he explained it this way. There's always supply and demand. So when you have too many, too much demand, not enough supply, you have high occupancy rate and you have to build more. But when you have too many supply and less demand, what you have to do is you have to take away the supply, and you take away the supply by converting them into a different use. So now, so in the city that he's focusing in, by converting some of these, and he's in 21 projects right now, conversion projects like that, by going in and taking away the supply, converting them into multifamily, the offices that are left will have higher occupancy rate, going back to that 70% again. I was like, that's brilliant. I've never even thought of it that way, but it makes so much sense. Yeah, what are some of your experience around offices, Javier?
Yeah, so it was a great interview with Kenny, and I thought the one thing that stood out with Kenny was our conversation when we had at a bar where I told him I wanted to buy an island and take Scarlett Johansson there. And I thought that's what you were going to say. That's what stood out the most. But anyways, that was a kind of a private conversation there, but I just threw it out there. I hope
does Brenda listen to you?
I'm going to be so much trouble.
Exactly. Oh, I was going to say, does Brenda listen to any of your podcasts?
She does. She's like, why you say a bad word? Why you say shit? Why you say, you know, all this and that? She gets mad at me. Yeah, I'm going to hear it. So I'm definitely going to hear it. But anyways, this is just terrible. But anyways, okay. Yeah, office. So I know some folks that do office and they do like medical. They'll go buy an office and they already have a dentist, orthodontist. They already have a group of 5 to 7 tenants that are looking to move in that area. And these doctors, they have this network of doctors and they all buy it together, right? So they buy this medical, they buy this office space like super cheap, and it's an area where they all want to expand, and then they all just open up an office there. And then once they open up their offices, automatically they're going to be other tenants that want that kind of tenant base, and they're going to fill in the rest. And then they're making a killing, not just on the real estate, they get lower rents as well. So they're making money on the business and real estate together. So it's a pretty smart concept, and that's pretty cool. There's some office buildings that are doing great. It just depends where you're located. High demand. Some office buildings are just getting destroyed, but like you say, supply and demand. At some point, will everybody go back to the office? Maybe not. I have no idea. But there's some different uses for each building. And one of them could be the multifamily for sure if it's available.
Yeah. I was at an office building I was at an investor dinner. A friend of mine was doing an investor dinner raising money. And that office building that he was raising money for, very interesting concept. So they focused their tenant avatar are executives of these big companies that are here in the Houston area. We have this area called the Energy Corridor, where you have a lot of oil and gas type companies. So they target the executives that work at those oil and gas company to office out of this building. So they're able to get much higher rents. The tenants stay much longer. And yeah, so that's a, like niching in and knowing who your avatar is, who your tenant base is. I think that's a key factor of success in a lot of different things, but it's interesting to see it implement here in the office space.
Yeah, for sure. So the offices are very interesting. Again, right? A lot of people go with what's hot. A lot of people go with what's not hot because they're buying low, right? Office for sure. And we'll talk about retail here shortly. So let's go to mobile home park and then we'll go to retail.
Yes. You read my mind. Let's do that. Yes, mobile home parks.
All right, mobile home
park. Do you own?
I have one. Yeah, I have one.
One.
I have one park. It's like 116 pads. And mobile home parks are great. I think they're a great investment. If somebody can't afford A-class apartment, $2,500, B-class, $1,800, C-class, $1,400, D-class, $1,000, mobile home park, right? That's like the, you can say that's like the last stand, right? $800, $300, bring a trailer in, you pay $375 for lot rent. It's always going to be full, right? And there's some bad mobile home parks and there's some really nice mobile home parks, depends where you're at. And I definitely like them. We bought one mobile home park and we had a big issue with the city. They didn't want a mobile home park there. Found that out afterwards. So my experience hasn't been the best with the mobile home park. Can you tell me, would I buy more? They cash flow really well. They do cash flow well. And then if you just own the land and the people own the trailer, you have the, you can rent the land for $400 a month and you have very low expenses. Just take care of the grass and maybe some street lights. And you have very low expenses and everybody's going to pay their $400. If they don't pay their $400, they got to move the trailer. If they move, you have a free trailer. You can go buy the keep the trailer, owner finance it to somebody, right? Fix it up, owner finance it to somebody, have somebody come and take it away. And you can do a whole bunch of stuff. I know a lot of people who make a lot of money in mobile home, in mobile homes. Will I keep buying mobile home parks? Probably not, right? It's not an asset that I really enjoyed or that I really wanted to pursue. I can't say no. If I find a really good project out there, sure. But our mobile home park was a little rough. It was a little rough, but they had a meth ice cream truck every Tuesday and the adults would go buy meth out there. So it was pretty bad.
Oh my gosh. Oh, wow. Yeah, definitely. Not all mobile home parks are created equal for sure. I have a friend of mine, Doug Ottersberg. He lives in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And if you go to New Mexico and you look at those mobile home parks versus the ones you see here in Houston, they're night and day difference. They're much nicer over there. There's like an actual community. So Doug owns 5 parks there in the Santa Fe and Albuquerque area. And he's been doing this for 27 years. He paid for all of his kids' college tuition and all of that off of mobile home parks. And so he lives and breathes those things. And obviously he loves it. And yeah, but one of the reasons why there's a lot of profit to be made in mobile home parks is because there's still a lot of mom and pop mobile home park owners. And a lot of mom and pop owners, they don't operate it very well. And so you can come in, you can buy them cheaply, inexpensively enough, and then put better management in and operate it better, more professionally. And then maybe you can roll all of that up. There are actually groups that specialize in buying up mobile home parks and then turn them around, stabilize them, and then group them up and sell them to a bigger institutional players, because they are starting to come in as well. But I think mobile home park is probably like the last commercial real estate asset that are still mostly owned by mom and pops. Soon that probably won't be the case anymore, but it still is right now.
Yeah, great cash flow. Yeah, great cash. You can go out with these companies like 21 Mortgage. It's a Warren Buffett company. And you basically get a credit line, $1 million, $5 million, whatever you can get. And you buy trailers with it, brand new trailers. You can go buy a $100,000 trailer, put it in your park. You can actually owner finance it yourself with these guys. These guys, they can buy it directly from the 21st Mortgage. They can get it through. It's pretty cool. You can finance it, the 21st Mortgage, the tenant that moves in, they can buy it. Or you can finance it yourself and then owner finance it to the homeowner. You make a spread. And they're very flexible with what you do with your credit line. And for you to put a trailer in your park is like $5,000. If it costs $100,000, you're paying like $5,000 and they'll put it in your park. It'll sit there like the model until you lease it up, until you sell it. You know, you can just rent it and then you pay the mortgage, whatever. It's super cool. Definitely, there's a lot of options out there and you can make a lot of cash on cash. It's high. Santa Fe, New Mexico. One asset class was RV parks. Yes, I have a good friend of mine.
You just read my mind over and over.
That's awesome. Right? Yeah, so Gene and Danny and Cumberland Investors, part of the $1 billion boardroom mastermind, we're together in. They just bought an RV park in Santa Fe. I believe it's owner financing. And I was talking to him yesterday. He was super excited. He was there at the office doing everything. They just leased out like 14 spots for a year. Like they just added $500,000 worth of value. And they just closed on this 2 weeks ago. And they just added $500,000 in value in a week or two. And yeah, so RV parks, I don't know much about RV parks. But people like to travel. People sometimes like the park so much that they'll pay for a year, right? If it's $500 a month, they'll pay $6,000 for the year so they don't lose their spot. They'll take their RV home and then they'll come back for the summer, or they'll leave their RV there. And so it's pretty cool. I mean, I think RV park is another asset class that a lot of people don't look at, but it's also hospitality, right? It's like a hotel. It's very management intensive. Yep.
All right. Let's get into your one of your favorite asset types, retail. So share with us about that.
Retail. So, you know, one of the things that I forgot to mention before, like in the previous episode on the industrial and retail, is the fact that you can do triple net leases. Mm. And those triple net leases, basically, tenants, whatever you negotiate, they can pay, right? They can pay all the insurance, all the taxes, and all the repairs, all the cleanups, anything, like whatever it is, you can. Property management, if you have property management as part of your expenses, they can pay for that. They pay for their electricity, plumbing issues, everything. They can pay for 100% of everything. It's pretty cool. Or you can negotiate, okay, maybe I pay insurance, they pay for the roof, whatever it is. Or they pay up to $1,000 on any maintenance issue, anything over $1,000, I pay. Or we split 50-50, whatever. You can structure these any way you want. And it's beautiful because if your insurance doubles or your taxes double, and they're in a triple net lease, whenever it's time for them to renew, like every time you do the audits for the CAMs or the expenses every year, you just bill them, back bill them, right? And they pay you for your insurance. You don't have to raise the rents. They'll pay for the taxes. It's part of the lease. I like retail because you also have your single tenant retail, which is good or bad. They leave, you got to refill it. But usually you have a year notice before they vacate. You have a year. You have a year to put somebody in there. Now you have some cost associated with putting somebody in there. And to replace some HVAC units can be a couple hundred grand. It could be a couple hundred grand to redo the parking lot, right? It could be $1 million if you got a big grocery store coming in TI. So it can be pretty expensive to move people in, but you could always negotiate and give a little bit of better rents and they pay for their own tenant improvement. Or you can pay for half or pay for all of it and then just charge them back on the rent. They pay a higher rent, so your valuation is higher if your goal is to sell in a year, right? And then if you have 5 or 10 tenants, it's great because like multifamily, you have 3 to 5 leave every month. Here, you might have 2 leave every 5 years, right? So you don't have to fill 2 spots, right? If you have 10 spots every 5 years, people want to, if they're doing well in business, then they're going to stay there longer. And a lot of these tenants as well share their profits in rents. Like they'll pay 3% in their gross. That's what they pay for rent. So the better job you do as an owner of bringing foot traffic in there, the better tenants you have, the more money they make, the more money they pay you, because that's, they can afford to pay 3% of their gross in rents, whatever, one of these national brands. And that's cool. And it's pretty neat to find out, because you get their financials, you start seeing how much money these businesses make, a sandwich shop, Ace Hardware Store, Family Dollar. You got all these Napa Auto Parts or Goodwills, Rent-A-Centers. You get all these national tenants. You're like, oh my gosh, these guys make a crap load of money. They make a lot of money. You see the financials. It's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. One of the things, like during COVID, I thought that retail would be affected by COVID like offices did. But no, because retail, they have a storefront. It's different from office. Office, they can choose to work from home. Retail, they can't do that. They have a storefront that they have to show up for. And so retail is one of those pretty stable assets. Funny story. When I first got into real estate investing 21 years ago, I learned how to buy luxury homes, like huge mansion type thing. And so I reached out to us. There was a mansion listed on the MLS here in Houston.
That's the French castle.
So it used to be part of a castle in France, like a real castle. They took it brick by brick, ship it here to Houston. It took 3 owners, $15 million just to put this thing back together. And so it was listed on the MLS for $9.6 million. I made a lowball offer to the agent for $4.5 million cash. And the seller didn't even bother to have his agent reach back to me. He called me up directly. He's like, who's this kid trying to lowball me? So I met with the seller. So interesting. So it turns out, his name is Jerry Moore, and you can Google him. But turns out, he was the richest man in Texas back in the 80s and early 90s because of this retail strip. So back in the 80s, the Houston market here had a huge real estate crash because of oil and gas. what he did was he would buy one shopping center on one side of the street, drops the rent, attracts the tenants from the other side, buys the other side, and then raise the rent on both sides. So he was like the shopping center king of this thing. Amazing. Yeah, just like that's one strategy. I think it's very hard to do unless you're able to to buy up enough. But man, and you can relate to this, Javier, but the guy had he had multiple. So his other hobby was flipping cars, like exotic supercars. He would go to the auction, buys them, do a big PR campaign around how he bought them, how he's now the owner, because he's known in the space, and then flip them for a lot higher after the PR campaign. And when I went to look at his house, just his home garage alone, it was a, I think it was like 15,000 square feet garage, all kinds of exotic cars. And then he had a couple more storage warehouses of another 300 something cars. But yeah, so whenever I think about you and your cars, and I know you're into cars, I think about him as well. So I look forward to you being that. So you being that next richest man in North Carolina with these exotic cars.
That's awesome. That's a great story.
And I mentioned in El Paso.
In El Paso, there you go. Yeah, I remember you telling me part of this story. So it's great to hear. One of the things about retail, it's people were buying retail and they were paying like really low cap rates. And in some areas, the cap rate has gone up because it has been somewhat stable. But the last couple of years when COVID hit, prices dropped. And then you have Amazon as well. So that kind of took a lot of the retailers out. So one of the things you got to worry about is just making sure your tenants are like e-commerce proof. If you have a nail salon or, you know, haircut places, things like that, restaurants. Try to get some tenants in there that are semi-recession proof and e-commerce proof.
That's a good point.
So that way you don't lose money. But right now, I think retail is a good price. You can buy some of these at 8, 9, 10 caps plus right now in this market. Yeah, I think you're going to be able to buy it even cheaper in 24. I like retail. It's been very interesting and very low management. Like it's also fairly easy. It's just, especially if everybody's on triple net lease, who didn't pay today? Okay, they're behind. Okay, great. That's it. That's it. They have a repair. They call their own repair. If it snows somewhere, then that's on you to call somebody to clean up the snow removal. You pay for that, but you charge the tenant back. So it's very, very low kind of management on our side.
Management, right?
So definitely.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Definitely like it.
Awesome.
All right. I think we got pretty much all the asset classes.
A lot of them for sure. There's a lot more, not as popular, but
we missed
we definitely covered.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about land. We didn't talk about land. Three episodes.
Yeah, I know. Yes. So we'll go ahead and wrap up this episode. Yeah. Thank you so much for tuning in. And Javier, what's your famous words?
Hey, I'm Javier, your host, along with Tim. I don't lose your shirt.
Don't lose your shirt, everyone. See ya.
This has been The Naked Truth. Our mission is to give it to you raw. If you got value from this episode, you're invited to leave an honest written review and share this episode with a friend. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.